I have a chocolate pie recipe that like my family is like, if you don't bring that, you're not welcome at Thanksgiving.
Welcome to the Beer Feelings Podcast, where together we are indulging in life and craft beer. This show is all about demystifying the craft beer space in a fun and flirty way for those who are just beginning their beer journey, or for people who already love their brews and are hungry to learn more. My name is Natalie Jones, and I am the gal pal you never knew you had. Now, guys, this show really is going to be a special one because today I am joined by Jackie Dodd Mallory, who is one of my personal beer icons. Now, I learned about Jackie because boyfriend Aaron, gave me one of her beer-infused cookbooks this past holiday season. And you guys, like, I know I'm dramatic sometimes, but like, I am literally obsessed with this. I've been trying, or at least I do my best to do one new recipe a week. And I think it's making me a better cook, but like, her cookbooks are no joke. Now, I'll let Jackie share how she got into the space, but a little bit of background before we get started. She's the Beeriness on Instagram, the author of 3 beer-infused cookbooks, and all around one badass beer babe. Now, on this episode, we cover all things cooking and beer. Where should you get started? What beers are easier or harder to cook with, as well as some other tips and tricks about our favorite boozy bev. So enough from me. Let's jump right in. Here is my chat with the one and only, the Beeriness herself, Jackie Dodd Mallory. Jackie, I am so excited to have you on the Beer Feelings Podcast. And for those that have been following along with my journey, food was my love well before beer, which makes sense because I wasn't allowed to drink beer for a while.
We eat much longer than we drink.
Yes. Yes. And so when I received your cookbook for Christmas, it was like the best gift my boyfriend had ever given me. So I'm so excited to have you on the show. We get to talk about food. We get to talk about beer, basically all my favorite things. So before I ask you all my questions, I would love for you to tell our listeners just a little bit about kind of how did you get into this space and how did you start writing really cool beer cookbooks?
Thanks. You know, it kind of probably was a similar journey to you. Mm-hmm. I had always loved food and I got really interested in cooking and really interested in like where my food comes from and where the ingredients come from. And I think it just kind of, that just segues into, you know, what am I drinking? And what, you know, if I'm really interested in the flavors of food, then that kind of goes with beer. And it also goes with, you know, what is in this beer and how is it made? And they kind of just sort of joined forces, I guess.
I love it. I love everything about it. I love, like you mentioned, like they do go so well together. What I hate when people ask me this question, but I'm going to ask it to you. Do you have a favorite beer or a beer that you go to more often than not?
No, you know, and I know that when you work sort of in the beer space, people always ask you that, like, what's your favorite beer? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times that has to do with, you know, what season is it and where am I? Mm-hmm. And if I was just in Auburn, New York for this beer festival, that was fantastic. But I, you know, I always want to know, like, what does this brewery do really well? What is this region known for? And, you know, you're not going to go to the Lambic region and then get, you know, IPA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're not going to go to Belgium and get, you know, sort of West Coast pale ale or sure. whatever. Like, you're not going to be in Yakima during fresh hop season and be like, do you have any stouts?
Yeah.
So I think that it's just a matter of, you know, where am I and what is going on and what's the weather like and what am I eating? And I do tend to look for lower ABV beers when I'm mm-hmm. sort of looking at a beer menu. And I think people get really excited about their super high octane beers, but I can't have that many of those without just being completely lost. So I do tend to kind of gravitate more towards session beers, but those kind of run the spectrum of there's always going to be a spectrum beer, like a session beer that you can find it any place.
Absolutely. I actually just, so my sister's a little bit younger than me. She's definitely, I joke that she's the fun sister and I'm like the sister that gets stuff done. And I just introduced her to the session beer. She's still drinking like college beers a little bit, but I've introduced her to either dark beers with lower ABV, like a Schwarz beer, or to session beers, and kind of have said like, Shannon, you can drink really cool stuff and really delicious stuff and still like go out and be fun and drink more than one and go out. But let's go ahead. Let's get talking about food and beer. So my first question, I know a little bit of the answer because I've read your cookbook, but for those that this is their first time kind of encountering with you, what does beer do to a recipe? I know typically like when you're cooking with wine, it's a flavoring agent and it's probably going to be a multi-tiered answer, but why would you put beer in food? Yeah. Why would you cook with it?
Why not just drink it like a normal person?
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of when this started, it was, you know, I found a lot of cooking with wine and why you would do that and recipes for that and not a lot with beer. And I drink wine too. I'm an equal opportunity drinker.
Love that.
But with beer just has so much more to offer. There's so many more ingredients. There's, you know, this whole spectrum of things that has to offer, that wine just doesn't. And, you know, there's a lot of different things. There's flavor, obviously. It's also a meat tenderizer. It's also a mild preservative, and it is also a little bit of a leavening agent. And, you know, when you talk about, especially baking with beer, you have grains and you have yeast and you have all of these things, and it ends up being sort of this like baking super liquid. So anything that you would normally use water for, like for instance, like pizza dough is a really good example. You would normally use water. And if instead you just use beer, I mean, that's just like a really easy, there's not always like an easy swap in a recipe, but that's usually a really easy swap. And then your dough has really great texture and really great flavor. And then it also is, you know, you get some really great, you know, air, which is what you need when you're making pizza dough. So
I never would think about beer in baking, except beer bread is such a common, like, that's something that probably everyone has tried at least at some point. So why not have beer pizza dough, and why not really expand that? So I haven't tried baking with beer beyond like anything too wild and crazy, but I, in my beer cooking journey, I'm starting to play with the meat tenderizing. So do you know, like, what in the beer, it makes sense with the baking, what is helping it along, but what in the beer is helping to kind of break down the protein chains? Is that what it's doing in meats?
It breaks down the, especially if you have a beer that, if you have a meat that's a little bit tougher. So like something like, you know, flank steak, which I really like because it is a little bit tougher, but it has really great flavor to it. And it does help to kind of break down those tougher tissues. It also, besides that, I use it, I always brine turkey. And especially like if you're looking for, if you have like a leaner white meat, like pork tenderloin, brining it, you infuse it with a lot of liquid. So that if you are somebody who, you know, and I'm not specifically pointing to my mom and all of her generation, but if you have a tendency to overcook the lighter meats like pork and chicken, you can cook them a little bit more and they're still going to be juicy if you do a nice beer brine. So if you have a mom that tends to do that, just pass her a recipe and be like, this is really good. It has nothing to do with the fact that you constantly overcook chicken and pork. This is a really good recipe.
I talk about my mom on almost every episode. I never mean to. It just happens. Mom, if you're listening, you're not an overcooker. I think, or at least I'm not going to admit to that on the show. No, she's good.
That's good.
She is a good right amount of cook.
A right amount of cooking. That's good.
Exactly. So hello, Mom. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the show.
Thank you for cooking your pork correctly.
Yeah. So kind of, as we talked about at the start of this episode, there are so many different like realms of beer, right? We have sweet beers and we have grainy beers and we have kind of like more savory beers. I think about it. So when you're trying to put beer in a recipe, like I have made, actually, a flank steak is what's in my fridge right mm-hmm. now with an IPA versus like a chocolate sauce. How mm-hmm. do you choose which beer goes in? And to give you a little bit of background, on a previous episode, we talked a little bit about pairing beer with food if you're just like mm-hmm. consuming both separately. And kind of the safe choice is to go like with like. So if you're mm-hmm. eating a sweet treat, you drink a sweet beer. But if you want something that's maybe more like exciting or like advanced, mm-hmm. maybe isn't the right word, but a little more inspired on your palate,
yeah.
you would kind of go across the flavor spectrum. So when you're choosing a beer to cook with, kind of, are there any rules that you should follow?
Yeah, there are lots of rules that I've definitely figured out via trial and error. Hops are not very friendly when you cook with them. IPAs can be total assholes when you try to cook with them. And a lot of that is you kind of know that hops are intense and they're big and they change when they're cooked. I mean, you know that from mm-hmm. a dry hopped beer when hops are in the boil versus, you know, when they're just put in and steeped at the end, like tea, they drastically change flavor. And sure. when you take if you try to cook something with an IPA, like for instance, beer bread is sort of it runs the spectrum as far as people's success. It's easy to get a bread that works. Like it's mm-hmm. easy to like there. Oh my gosh, look at this bread. But I've had so many people tell me like, yeah, I made beer bread and it was not edible. I couldn't even eat it. And I said, yeah. You used an IPA. And they're like, I did use an IPA. And I'm like, because you like drinking it, you thought you would like eating it.
Yeah.
But you cooked the shit out of the hops. And so the hops like bit back. So I would say if you're yeah. new to cooking with beer, stay away from the IPAs, save those for later when you have a little bit more experience. And that's one thing to keep in mind is that a maltier beer is going to cook better. And malt is the ingredient that is going to kind of stay around in a really good way. Hops mm-hmm. will stay around, but in a way that is very hit or miss. And yeast is going to be the more subtle. It's harder to get that to translate when you're talking about cooking. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Another thing to keep in mind is, you know, think about when you're talking about, you know, the flavors that are going to stick around, think about all those ingredients being in one bowl and do they go together? Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you were going to make like a pumpkin pie, like, yeah, of course you can use pumpkin beer. You're not going to be able to taste it. It's all mm-hmm. just going to get, but it's not going to be a bad choice. But if you use like a hazelnut brown ale, like yeah. that's going to be really good. And that's going to go really well because you are going to get a little bit of that nuttiness that's going to pair really well with the pumpkin and kind of bring out those earthy notes. So like with like is a really safe choice, but also, you know, finding flavors that go well together. Like if you had something that, you know, if you had something that had like a lot of basil in it, having a beer that has like a really strong lemony notes is going to go really well because those two things work really well together. So think about, you yeah. know, what are the main flavor notes in this beer? Okay. So I have all those. So now what are the flavor notes in the recipe? Okay. Do those things go together? Like if I were just to lay all those ingredients out on the table, what are they going to go really well together? You know, you're not going to put like a caramel stout into a chicken noodle soup. Yeah. I mean, that is awful. So yeah.
That sounds pretty rough. And I love how you describe like equating cooking hops to the brewing mm-hmm. process on like, yeah. that makes so much sense. Like that just clicked a bunch of kind of things and concepts together in my beer cooking journey on like, that actually explains why some things turned out really bad because if it was brewed with the hops in early, it would have killed all those essential oils mm-hmm. and made them super bitter. So, okay. Well, I have just become a better chef. Okay. Now, mom, now I'm going to talk about you. when we cooked with beer growing up, mm-hmm. it was mainly in cheese fondue. Like that was our go-to mm-hmm. beer thing. And mom, I'm not meaning to throw you under the bus, but here we are. The statement in the house was kind of like, let's use a beer that we're not too excited to drink because it's going to cook out and it doesn't matter. And then mm-hmm. we'll buy beer that we're excited to drink and we'll drink that. So do you have thoughts? I know like on the wine spectrum mm-hmm. from my Food Network watching, you shouldn't cook with a wine that you wouldn't drink right next to it. Like you should have a higher quality wine if you want a higher quality food. Is that the same in beer as well? Or should we be going for some of like the bigger box cheap beers?
I think it's sort of neither. And I kind of disagree with, I know people always say that about wine, but if I have like a wine that I'm really, really excited about, someone gifted me this $300 bottle of wine, I am not cooking with that.
Sure. Yeah.
But I like, am also not going to sort of, I'm also not going to cook with a wine that I don't like. So I think, but there's kind of a middle ground there. Like if somebody, you know, if someone gives you a Pliny, I would not recommend cooking with it because you're not, first of all, you're probably, it might be one of the few times that you can get to drink it, but also those really like beautiful, subtle notes, you're not going to get that in cooking. But I also think there is a place in the spectrum of cooking for every single beer, including Budweiser's, including the homebrew that you totally fucked up and you don't know what to do with. There is something for everything. So it's just a matter of why you're using it. So if you're using it for a meat tenderizer, some of those flavors might come through in a really subtle way. Some of them might not come through at all. So if you, like I had a friend who made a homebrew and he was really excited to use rosemary from his garden and he used way too much and the beer was like not even drinkable, but it made a really, really great brine for his Thanksgiving turkey because you need a lot of it and it works really, really great. So I think it's sort of both and neither. I think that, you know, just buying a beer because it's cheap, that will work maybe if you're doing, you know, certain recipes. But when I am making a recipe where the beer is going to come across, I'm going to use something that I like and that I am excited to cook with. Also, the other thing to keep in mind is a lot of times you'll have beer left over, so you're going to want to drink it. So another thing to think about is, you know, if you do open a beer, you don't necessarily want to finish it. You don't really like it. Or maybe it's, you know, you open this bottle and it was just like this bomber and it was huge, like 18%. And you're like, there's no way I'm finishing this. There are some really great ways, like save it and then make brownies with it or make cake with it or do something like that.
Oh yeah.
So it is something that I think is really great.
Does it matter if it's flat or not?
Some recipes it does, but a lot of them it doesn't. Like if you were going to cook it, it doesn't matter if it's flat. If you were going to use it to sort of activate yeast or make a bread with, then you don't want it to be flat. But there are some things, like I really like making marshmallows with beer, and you want the beer to be flat. Oh my gosh.
I just went to the grocery store before this and I feel like I'm going to have to make a run after this call. Oh my God.
So yeah, you actually want the beer flat for that. But then if you're doing something like, if you're going to make a chocolate sauce, it doesn't matter if the beer's flat or not.
Sure. And
if the beer is flat, it's easier to measure and make sure you have the right amount. So it mostly doesn't matter, I would say.
Man, I wish I had this cookbook at the start of the pandemic, partially because I was cooking a lot more since we were all like trapped in the house and trying to entertain ourselves. But the other thing was all of the breweries, at least in my area, weren't set up to can in 16 ounces.
Yeah. And then we had the whole candemic where even if they were, like cans were gone off the face of the planet.
Exactly.
So yeah. Yeah. So maybe you could get a growler, but it's like you have a ticking clock as soon as you get that thing. So yeah.
Exactly. And boyfriend and I agree on a lot of beer topics. Like if there's a Saison in our house, we love it. If there's a triple in our house, cool. But I really love dark beers, especially like it's cold in Colorado right now. That's what I'm drinking right now is what is this? It's a peanut butter graham cracker porter. And it's awesome.
Oh my God. That sounds amazing. Yeah. I'm a big delicious. Dark beer fan also.
And I like, it feels cozy and it's the beer equivalent of soup for me. Like,
yeah,
it feels very cozy. Good. And Aaron just doesn't love dark beers. And I don't believe that I should make him drink the dark beer because I don't want it to be wasted on him, but this would have been really cool. I made one of your chocolate sauces. Like it was like a thick fudgy chocolate sauce and you didn't even cook the beer out and it was killer on ice cream, but that would have been so great to have, like, to use my flat beer instead of being like, well, it's a Monday. I guess I'm just going to drink the whole thing, which I mean, it worked out fine. It was all right.
Also not the worst problem, but yeah,
it all worked out all right. But that's so for all your crowler people out there, buy it with confidence, drink as much as you want, and then cook with the rest. I think that's a great solution.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Very cool. So we talked a little bit about like IPAs might be the most challenging or anything with like a hop forward ness to it. Is there like on the other end of the spectrum, is there a beer that's just like really hard to mess up or really easy to cook with?
Yeah. If I'm only picking one beer for the rest of my life to cook with, it'll be a brown ale. And I think brown ales are so massively like undervalued as a whole. Like we never had, like there, we went through a Belgian phase and like everybody's gone through an IPA phase and, you know, sours are, you know, having their moment. And there's never been like a brown ale phase where everybody's like super pumped
about
brown
ale. They're not sexy. Yeah.
No.
They taste like, good.
They're like a pea coat. Like everybody sort of has one.
Yeah.
But nobody is like, oh yeah, that's such a killer pea coat. But like, it's sort of like never gone out of style.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about brown ales. They're always, I really like them and they kind of are a great early fall, like early spring crossover beer because they're not quite a stout, but they're not quite like, they're sort of like in this warm-ish, coldish weather beer. Mm-hmm. And I really like them, but they're also because they have like a really great malt backbone. They usually have really great carbonation. They're kind of like a multi-purpose. They're great for beer bread. They're great for chocolate sauce. They're great for stout cake. They're great for like, they kind of do, they'll kind of do anything you ask them to. They're like a golden retriever. They're just like, what
do you
want?
I love that.
Sure, I'll do it.
I love that. Yeah. I would have guessed like Pilsner or something like that was normally our cooking. That's our cheese fondue beer.
And that's not a Pilsner. Bad choice. Like you can't screw up a Pilsner, but also you're not going to get a lot of flavor from them.
They're just really like quiet in the cooking.
Yeah.
I think is what I noticed there. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have browns on one end, IPAs on the other end, and then everything else kind of in the middle. How are sours to cook with? Does it just depend on like how they're soured and like very seldom, maybe it's because I'm not looking for them. Very seldom do I see a sour that's just like a sour on its own. Normally they have a bunch of other things in there. So is that part of, or tell me about cooking with sours because I like drinking sours.
Yeah, I like sours too. But they're very different from everything else. It's almost more like you're going back to the cooking with wine because it is in every beer, there is sort of the rock star ingredient, whether it's, you know, the malt, the hops, some kind of adjunct, some kind of whatever, or yeast. And it's a lot more rare for it to be yeast to be like the rock star ingredient. But with sours, it's yeast or bacteria, which sounds like very unsexy to non-beer people. Like, but yeah, those are like the flavors that come out. And when you cook with a sour, it's really hard to get that to translate, but it is great to use a sour when like I've made gelato with sour. You do get that really great flavor, especially if you use like a sorbet, you use like that, like a raspberry. It's really great. The other thing I like to make, you know, everybody, we had our sourdough moment in 2020.
I'm still living that. Yep.
Which is like great. I got really excited because I was like, I can actually make sourdough recipes and people will actually make them.
Yeah.
People actually care right now. So I got really excited about it. But making your sourdough starter or feeding your sourdough starter with your sour ale is going to be great, especially if you have leftover. If you're like, I open this, save it to feed your starter. Because sourdough starters are basically the same as sourdough beer. The sourdough starter depends on Brettanomyces and some kind of wild yeast, which is not always like, it depends on lactobacilla and some kind of wild yeast, which could be Brettanomyces. But what it does is try to pull that from the environment, which it does successfully. But sometimes if you're like, well, you know, my sourdough is tasting kind of weird, it's probably pulled some kind of weird bacteria and it's probably pulled some kind of weird yeast. So if you feed it, it almost sort of rebalances it because you have, especially if you have a situation where you have a sour where the yeast is still really active, you can feed it and it will sort of overpower anything else that's in the starter. And I will usually, because, you know, I'll go through these phases where I'm like all about my starter and then I'll kind of ignore it and it'll die and I'll, you know, flush it or whatever. I'm like, sorry, the funeral for my starter.
R.I.P.
And then I have to start over again. Yeah. And so I usually will start over with a Brett Lacto sour is what I'll usually start with, or I'll go through the phase where you're like, okay, now I'm feeding like once a day or less. Then I'll usually stick the sour in there. but yeah, it's, that's a really good application for it. But anything where you're not cooking it too long, because you're just going to kill all the flavors that the yeast would bring.
Sure.
Anyway. So yeah.
Very cool. It's funny. You didn't know that all of this stuff is going on in my house. We have re-entered the sourdough phase. We lived it when everybody else was living it. And then we, boyfriend and I, have been working on home brewing some more. So we have, mm-hmm. when you're done brewing, you have a bunch of yeast left over, and we just got some new brewing equipment so we can capture that yeast again. So we're trying like to use that yeast to then make the sourdough starter. And it's a different kind of beer bread. It's like beer ingredient bread. But yeah, the starter's been sitting on the counter for a couple of days and I think it's dead. So now I just need to go get a sour beer and we'll reset. So that's awesome.
Yeah,
very cool.
I have a sourdough fried chicken recipe. That's my favorite fried chicken recipe ever.
Oh my gosh.
So if you have, once your starter gets up and running, sourdough fried chicken. Very good. And sourdough waffles are like, to this day, my favorite waffles I've ever had. The sourdough waffles. They're very good.
Oh my God. I should have eaten before this. I'm going to eat so much after. I'm going to be like, these flavors are kind of dancing around in my head. Well, if listeners are feeling the same way that I am, what is like the easiest recipe for them to start off with that they have a really high chance of being successful? Like beer cooking for dummies. Where should they begin?
I think, you know, wow. I think it depends on what you like. Some people really like baking. Some people are terrified of baking, but you know, starting with a brine or a simple chicken recipe. I have a vegetarian cookbook. So if you're vegetarian, it's totally, there's tons of stuff you can do. Bread. I think beer bread is probably where most people start. Either people tell me beer bread or beer canned chicken, is kind of where people end up starting. So those are usually like high success, as long as you don't use IPAs. Just drink the IPA. Use something else to start.
That's awesome. Very cool. And then one last question before we totally sign off today. To date, this might be an answer like your favorite beer, but to date, what has been your favorite recipe that you've made with beer?
The ones I make most consistently, I have a chocolate pie recipe that like my family is like, if you don't bring that, you're not welcome at Thanksgiving. So that's a very popular one. And then, the beer brined turkey, which I love, and I made it for years. But I've kind of sort of like done this weird pivot in the last couple of years where I do the brine and then I confit the turkey legs and I do it all separate. So you don't have like the big pretty bird.
Yeah.
But I have like this,
but they're all whole cooked, table like, full of just like right.
confit legs, and then the breast is brined, and then the legs are brined, but I'll confit the legs and then breast separate. But there's that. And then, waffles and pizza dough are like the kind of the ones that I'm like, because people always ask like, do you put a beer in everything? And I'm like, no, I don't put beer in everything. But there are some things that I'm like, this, it has to be made with beer. And I think pizza dough is one of those things. Brining your turkey at Thanksgiving is one of those things. So yeah. And like chocolate cake also so good with stout.
Yum.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Adding that to the list too. So, this has been such a fun episode for me. Like I said, now I have a list of to-dos, like go back to the grocery store, buy some more beer. My house is going to smell really great tonight. Feed the starter. That's right. Tell boyfriend all of these things about the starter. So I have had so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If others have enjoyed listening and they want to keep up with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Instagram is the platform I'm most active on. I'm at The Baroness. And then I have a website, thebaroness.com.
Perfect. So,
yeah.
I will make sure to link all of those down below in the show notes. So I have loved following along. I'm still fangirling so hard that you're on the show, but thank you for coming along on this journey, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, wasn't that amazing? Like, I'm still fangirling so hard. Now, like, I don't even know. Honestly, I knew this interview was going to be a fun one, but I had no idea that I would be walking away with so many tips and tricks, especially because I've read her cookbook. So this was just like, I hope you had fun. I certainly did. Now, before I head out, I wanted to give one speedy quick update on the Beer Feelings product line that we all know and love. Now, because I received so many requests at farmers markets and through our online shop, I'm so excited to announce that we have expanded our Feelings candle line. So now, not only can you enjoy our fall Feelings candle, but we have spring, summer, and winter Feelings ready to go to enhance your boozy and bougie spa night at home, really regardless of what season you're in. They're going to be available year-round, so you get to pick and choose what you want to smell when you're drinking a yummy beer. So this also means that you can customize the birthday box with any season that you want or make it appropriate for that person's special day. But that's it, friends. I'm going to go head out and make a long grocery list and an even longer beer list. And if you're enjoying listening to this show, make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to. And no matter what you're doing for the rest of the day, I sincerely hope that you're doing it with a great beer in hand and even better people by your side. See you guys next week. Cheers.